ashamed. Embers in the fireplace, too cold to burn, too hot to weather away. Show up by the house again, listening to Jungle Land, peeling away from the safe and essential.
From sea to shining sea, throughout the solar system, and extending to interstellar regions beyond, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the show, whoever you are, and wherever you happen to be all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the show. It's Friday night. Hang on just a little bit longer till weekend. It's weekend eve, and so I know a lot of you will get some days off and, you know, have a little time to relax. Not everybody, but a lot of you will, and You're some of you are still working that early evening shift. You know, you're still into the week, but weekend is on the way. All right. If you're on the other side of the planet from here, it's already the weekend. Congratulations, you made it. I'm here because you have a right to know, and I'm here because you matter. And we have people that listen to this show literally from all over the world. And so let me ask you a question. What part of the world are you in? Now, what's the weather like? That's usually what people ask when they're just trying to make a conversation and don't know what to talk about. They say, what's the weather like? They talk about the weather. Well, there's a reason I ask you about that, because I hear from people all over the world virtually every day. People from around the world, I get email and telephone calls, and really around the world people are talking about how their weather is just not quite normal for this time of year for their locale. And you know, it's either unseasonably cold or it's unseasonably warm, or they're getting way, way more rain than they normally get, or they're not getting near as much. It just seems like all over the planet, people are experiencing extremes. And we're going to be talking about some of that tonight. There is a video that is making its way across the consciousness of people who inhabit the internet and who are interested in the world of the strange and unexplained. And this video talks about, and in fact states, that Earth's pole has shifted, its magnetic pole has shifted. And I have some doubts about that. I think it may be experiencing more slippage than shifting, if it's doing anything. But anyway, we're going to talk about that tonight. My guest is someone who has quite a bit of knowledge about that. I've given the video to him, or the link, and he's had a chance to view it. And I'll let you guess all about who that's going to be. I'm not going to tell you yet. I'm going to let those of you who are psychic figure it out. Those of you who are remote viewers can take a look at my screen and you'll see him laughing at the moment. He'll be with us in just a moment. And we're going to be talking about that in relationship to some other stuff that we have talked about before, and some developments with that. I know it all sounds mysterious, but then again, it is a show about the strange and the unexplained, so I guess it fits. We'll be back right after this message.
All of the music used here at the Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. Most of it from independent artists at musicalley.com. Go over to musicalley.com. Check out thousands of artists and thousands of great independent tunes. Musicalley.com.
Well, it did it to me again. It shorted me on the intro back into the end of the show. I've been doing a lot of work on that, trying to figure out what that is. It's all there, but for some reason, sometimes it plays and sometimes it doesn't on that break. So I don't know. Maybe I just need to take it all down and reinstall it and go for it once again, right from the starter's gun. Are starter's guns illegal yet? Okay, now, let's talk about this thing about pole shift just a little bit, and then I'll introduce our guest. Remember, I know it's hard for people to remember, but there was this thing called December the 21st, 2012, and everybody was freaking out about it. Remember that? And so the same kind of thing happens around other topics from time to time. They flare up. Now, pole shift has been something that's been around for a long time. The topic has been around for a long time. People have been talking about it, writing books about it, doing DVD sessions on it, doing documentaries about it. It has undoubtedly happened in the past. It seems provable from the geologic record. And if it has happened in the past, then it's not a very big stretch of the imagination, if a stretch at all, to understand that it will happen again at some point, sometime, it will happen again. So every once in a while, a new book comes out or a new video shows up over at YouTube that gets people talking a lot, and this one has. For some reason, it has begun, people have begun to circulate it, and it's begun to catch fire a little bit. And what it shows is some graphs from, you know, about the magnetosphere as the solar wind is hitting it and so forth. And it shows, according to the guy doing the video, it shows that our magnetosphere polarity has changed, has swapped. The magnetosphere, not the Earth didn't flip over, but the magnetosphere polarity has changed. Has, you know, what was the positive side is now the negative. What was the negative side is now the positive, and so forth. So I sent the link over to my guest, Marshall Masters. There have been some changes. You know, they've been, his group have been watching the approach of an object in the sky. It has, I think he said, four satellites around it, four moons, four companions, traveling companions. We've seen pictures of it, and he's given you the link where you could go watch it live on the camera, the live camera that was set up and watching it. And there have been some changes and updates in that as well. But let me go ahead and bring him on air. Marshall, welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure to be back, Kev.
There's a reason why I kept you a secret.
Okay.
The reason I kept you a secret is because even in our genre where people pride themselves on being open-minded, they tend to pigeonhole things. And I didn't want them to think, oh, that's the guy that's talking about the Blue Kachina. So it's going to be a Blue Kachina show. We're going to talk about that as related to a lot of other things. Nothing happens in a vacuum, but it's not the Blue Kachina show. And so I didn't want people to pigeonhole you and the show tonight. I wanted them to stay tuned and hear the very interesting conversation, at least parts of it, that you and I had about all of this. So let's start off right where I said I didn't want them to pigeonhole you. Let's start off with the Blue Kachina. By the way, let me say, folks, you know, when you do not see Marshall until I click a button and it brings him up on screen, but I can see Marshall since before the show, and I can see all of our guests that way. And undoubtedly, without question, Marshall is the best off-air dancer we have. Marshall is a good dancer. He dances with the music during the breaks. Yeah, there you go. All right, so let's talk about this object. And what's the update on this thing?
Well, Kevin, in May, we lost the feed. The Vulcan feed was shut down. This was at a time when the object is it's difficult viewing times, but we do have some excellent images that we've downloaded from it. It's clearly gotten bigger, and it's more defined in its shape. I'll be bringing out a YouTube video on this, adding to the gossip, as you might call it. And there's the explanation for the Vulcan feed being shut down was that lightning struck it. That was one, although, frankly, we've been watching this since January of this year, and, well, we've never seen lightning striking in that area, although Turrialba is highly active, so it could be. What I'm waiting for is to see what happens when and if the feed is turned back on. That's going to tell us whether or not this is a cover story or it is a technical glitch. If it's a technical glitch, it'll come on with the same point of view, the same picture, the same framing, or close to it as before. But if it comes back and it's unusable for our purposes, then it's a cover story, and you know, they pulled the plug about the time it really started to get large. We saw over a period of about a week and a half where we saw some intermittent tampering with the feed. And to me, you know, given my background, I'm a retired systems analyst and I did a lot of work on internet technologies. And it really looks to me like there was an intercept on that Vulcan feed because the images were being cropped and enlarged and altered. The way it was happening, and the intermittent nature of it, it would go to that, come back, and then it just simply dropped dead. I just have a hard time with it being a lightning strike. I mean, if that's going to happen, a lightning strike is going to fry the equipment, and the feed is just dead right there. So
that's what you call DRT.
They're going to be grounded. They'll have grounding rods and all of that. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, all we can do is wait to see what happens when it turns on. And if it's usable for our purposes, well, then it's just a coinkydink, harmless. Mm-hmm. But if it turns on and we can't use it because they're pointing the camera down into the bowels of the volcano instead of showing the horizon, then it's pretty obvious that they don't want you to see what's on the horizon. And then there's a third possibility. They just turn it back on when it's no longer relevant and the object has been sighted elsewhere.
All right, so just so everybody understands, because not everybody saw those previous shows where we showed pictures from that live feed.
Mm-hmm.
This is a camera, a high def camera.
Yeah, it's a very good one.
That was mounted on top of the Turrialba volcano and pointed across the volcano and out onto the horizon. And out there on the horizon, in the sky, you could see an object. And this object was that's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. That is the object that was being observed by Marshall and by his team. And Marshall put the link out there where everybody could go watch it live for themselves. And it stayed up for quite a while. Now, what he's telling us is it's dead. That feed is dead and nobody is able to see anything. That's explanation it. Being that it got struck by lightning.
And it's, you know, it's plausible deniability. And that's all you can say for it at this point is that, yes, it's a convenient problem, but on the other hand, plausible deniability. I've been in this game since 1999. And when it comes to these situations where there's a case of plausible deniability, it just raises my little Andorian antennae, so to speak. And for example, out in the Pacific, there's an entire, north of Australia, there's an entire swath of sonar buoys that are not reporting. And they're saying, well, it's just this big, massive problem. Really? Seems kind of convenient, because before all those sensor buoys allegedly failed and went offline, we were seeing substantial rises and falls in seabeds. And we're talking, I mean, sometimes in by as much as several tens of meters. These are substantial movements. And so all of this information is masked out. The Vulcan feed is out. It's something where it's very easy now for us to just say, well, there's nothing to be concerned about because we're blind. That is, unless we look at the world around us or turn on television, and what are we seeing? We're seeing tornadoes killing people, levees are breaking, we have homes being flooded, tornadoes taking people out. Look what's happening right now on the East Coast, where we have this first storm of the season that just plowed right up the coastline and is dropping an awful lot of rain. And it's kind of a dark harbinger of what's going to come for this hurricane season. So right, we have all these weather anomalies, but again, it's really, until it's in people's faces, they don't see it.
Okay, now, talking about data dropping out, and you know, that before I get into that, I want to go to your CNN days.
Mm-hmm.
When you were producing science features for CNN.
Mm-hmm.
If information, you're doing a story and you're producing it for CNN back then, information suddenly goes missing like this, and had, if you reported that, would they have aired that or would they have edited that out?
At the time I was involved at CNN, and that was its initial days when Ted Turner ran the network, they'd have been all over that like white on rice. I was doing the three-minute features that were airing on Sundays, the science features, and I specialized in working in universities in Texas and really did a lot of interesting stories. It was a quite enjoyable thing to do. And then when I moved to California to go in the computer business, well, that was the end of that. But, and I used to go to Atlanta 3 to 4 times a year with my story packages, sit down with the producers, we'd figure out, and sometimes I would go out on the news floor. If you remember the old days in Atlanta where they used to show the news floor. Mm-hmm. And that was a really tense place to go into because it was a hard news network back then, 24/7. I was the fluff guy. The three-minute science features was Ted Turner's idea of fluff. I mean, today it's unfortunately dead white females and political picadillos.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all about, it's not news, it's news entertainment. Hard news is a filler, kind of in between the gaps. It tends to be a lot more yellow journalism. So it's, when I look at the CNN of today, it doesn't look anything like the CNN that I was involved with. And Turner, I think, was a very impressive man. He ran a tight ship. He was a real butt kicker, boy, I'll tell you.
Okay, so back then, this would be a story that CNN would be all over.
Today, not only that, they'd have probably stolen it from me. I mean, you know, somebody would have looked at this and went, slurp, hey, we don't need this contractor out there. Let's just snag it. And, you know, it would have been that good that they would have taken it. So. Uh-huh.
And these days they ignored it entirely.
It was much more, it was just a completely different news environment back then. And you didn't have all the consolidation of media that you have today.
Mm-hmm.
People don't really understand that there's just a handful. You can count on one hand the major news corporations that are controlling all of these outlets. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, I was doing CNN, this was back in the days when you were limited as to how many stations you could own. And during the Bush administration, an FCC eliminated that rule, And so then what happened after that was you had guys like Clear Channel and whatever. They were just clear cutting, and they would go into towns, buy up radio stations. And then the first thing they would do is install their black box in the head end to take their studio feed. And then the next thing they would do is fire the local news department because they didn't want local news. Mm-hmm. And they would keep the salespeople and a few others, and that was about it. And so we just don't have competition in media like we had back then. That was one of the reasons why, you know, Turner really had to be edgy. He had to be right on, you know, right out there and getting those stories. Mm-hmm. Was there was competition. Today there's not competition, not competition for news stories. It's competition for advertising.
Yeah. All right. So now we talked about information going missing, and you know my reputation is that when a black hole develops in the information, I assume the truth is sitting right there in the center of the black hole. And rather than running from the black hole, I tend to try and dive in. I want to find it. And if you see ripples on the water and you want to know where the pebble is, go follow the ripples backward. And mm-hmm. then when you get back to zero point, go straight down. You'll find the pebble. And that's the way information is as well. So this information has gone missing. And the video link that I sent you is about information that mm-hmm. went missing for 5 hours. And mm-hmm. Then the difference in what we saw before and and what we saw after the 5 hour period. Let's talk about that. You had a chance to look at it. And what this video, my understanding of this video, is what it purports to show is that there was a polarity shift in the magnetosphere.
Well, you know, I have been reporting for quite some time that
we have to step away for a break, Marshall. So hang on to that. We'll come back to that right after this break. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this.
Us to end that way. I didn't want us to end it all. Yeah, no shit didn't mean a thing to me.
can't help myself.
Works better when you turn it on, Marshall. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And our discussion with Marshall Masters about this thing in the sky. And at the moment, we're talking about a video that purports to document, if you will, that there was a polarity shift in the magnetosphere. In other words, the positive side is now the negative side, and vice versa. The negative side is now the positive side. And he's showing some official graphs and things like that. And I had just asked Marshall, you know, what about that? What, first of all, you had a chance to look at the video. What do you think about his conclusion that these graphs show a polarity shift in our magnetosphere? Do you think he's correct?
Well, I've been watching the magnetosphere for some time, and there's been this ongoing deformation where it was pointed, actually the tail of it was pointed down. Usually it just, the tail of it is heading out towards the moon. In that direction, heading away from us, because that's where it's going from the sun. But we were, for years, we've been seeing these abnormal deformations. So if he's getting to a point where he's saying the magnetosphere flipped and it's causing the earthquakes, I can't comment to that. But
why not?
Well, I've seen what he has here.
Uh-huh.
We would have to go through, reconstruct all the data.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second thing is, the problem with reconstructing the data is, and this is one of the things we're working on right now in our team and we're researching, is what I call jiggering of the data. And, you know, here, the guy had a chunk of time missing, and then it comes back and has another graphic. And, yeah, was there a cover up there? No question. There was a cover up. Because this is typically what you look at the timing. First off, it's late night when everybody's asleep. All right. So you pick a time that, you know, you're going to have the fewest number of people to see it. And 2 o'clock in the morning is a few number of people. And that, he makes the case. But for the earthquakes, you know, think back just in your mind. And for the listeners out there, stop, clear your mind, think about this, and I'm going to ask you a question. When was the last time you ever heard USGS upgrade an initial quake report? When was the last time?
They don't do it.
They always do what?
They downgrade it.
You betcha. All right. So if you have a 7.1, it becomes a 6.9. If you have a 6.1, it becomes a 5.9. All right. And the other thing, too, is that the scale has been changed, so it's been denuded. So there's this continual tampering with the data feeds that are going to the to the public. And again, you know, we're in the land of plausible deniability.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that he may be correct, but it would, in order to verify that he's correct, it would take quite a bit of reconstruction of data.
Yeah, and we're actually working on that reconstruction of data. So, you know, but this is something where we're going back, you know, we're going back to the 80s to do this, because I'm trying to find a reliable baseline before all of this tampering came on. And now I see it as tampering. I've been watching it for years. People are going to disagree. Yeah, that's fine. But I see these kind of, you know, I see this kind of stuff. I'm glad that this guy picked up on it. He's monitoring these feeds. Stuff disappears, comes back, and what was there before is not there before. And if you ask them, they say, well, the site just automatically updated. There's going to be some sort of dismissive reason why that information has disappeared. And then if you press them on it, it'll be, well, it was anomalous information, so don't worry about it. And it's always that way. Something breaks, something's anomalous. You know, there's always these little excuses to bury this stuff. And it's a very effective strategy.
Okay.
Very, very effective strategy. Because, you know, right now the whole topic is languishing. Because it, you know, the information that we were getting is being throttled so significantly.
All right, so let me bring the two topics together, the two that we have talked about. We've talked about this object in the sky and the fact that the camera that was monitoring it has suddenly gone dead with an excuse. Mm-hmm. And so we've talked about that, and now we've talked about this magnetosphere thing. So let me ask you a question before I get to the big question. This is important, though. About when did the camera go dead?
This camera, well, actually, all you even have to do is just to go right out to the site, and I think the same camera in Turrialba, the same freeze image is there. It was May 29th at 1545 Central Standard Time.
Okay, so that doesn't match the 5-hour period of time when the magnetosphere flipped.
No.
So that's what I was looking for, to see if it matched. All right, so now here's the big question. You mentioned to me today that whenever we talked about this, you told me about the fact that you'd been monitoring the magnetosphere and it was, you know, getting slammed always from the sun side, but you'd been noticing for some time now that it's also being slammed from the other side by something.
Yeah, we did come across another video, uh-huh. And we're researching that, and this fellow went through and did a time study on it. And this is where we tend to do better. If you have isolated incidents, you know, it's like UFO. It's like there's not enough evidence to pile on the table for a smoking gun that people are going to want to believe. On the other hand, when you look at things over time, you get historical data. Now that's a different thing. Now you've got some real useful information. So this one particular video is what he is showing is that our planet is now catching solar wind from two directions, from the sun and from behind us. And we really are fascinated by this. And so we're going through and we're looking at this very closely. And that, to me, is a strong argument for what he's talking about. Planet X, Blue Kachina, Red Kachina, whatever name you want to call it. But the thing is, where is that other solar wind coming from? Because that is something, when I looked at it, I went, wow. You know, it's on the forward side of the sun. It's one thing. But on the reverse side, you know, what you have is around the edges of the sun and going back, the direction is going backwards. But sandwiched in between that are solar winds that are coming in from the opposite direction going towards our equator.
All right.
Wow. Now that is, when we saw that, you know, my eyes just went, whoa, I haven't seen this before. And so we're digging into it. And his, this YouTuber's position on it is that if we have another, if we're in a binary star system, what we're seeing is solar wind coming in from another sun.
All right. Now, in a previous show that you and I did about this blue coccina, this thing in the sky, that's mm-hmm. no longer visible because the camera, or it's visible, I'm sure, but it's you can't see it because the camera's been deactivated.
We've caught sight of it from a couple other feeds, which I'll be putting up in my next video.
Okay.
Now, so it's been spotted elsewhere.
In a previous show, you said, and you explained the data for how you knew this. You said that this thing, whatever it is in orbit around something else that is in orbit around the sun.
Precisely.
That something else, could it not be what's causing that other solar wind? And could this all work together to produce the change in the magnetosphere that the YouTuber purports to document?
Yeah, you know, he's got a situation where he's saying he's observed this and he's drawing an inference that there's a coincidental relationship or a direct relationship between seismicity and this event.
Mm-hmm.
I can't talk to that. I mean, you know, to...
Well, I understand that, but the change in the magnetosphere. Just
but
that.
The change in the magnetosphere, yeah, it's changing. We're seeing changes with the planet. You know, another story that's really been hot on the YouTube side is this concern that magnetic north, the North Pole, is moving so rapidly towards Siberia.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it kind of corkscrews around, but it has in the last, this year, you know, it's been quite interesting. It's covered a lot of ground this year, a lot more than it normally does, and it is slowed down, which, you know, would suggest that, yeah, it's going to do what it does. It's going to just corkscrew back, and maybe it's just got a bigger pattern, and it's going to take more time to eventually work its way towards Siberia. But still the same. You know, the degree of travel is just stunning as
well,
to how far North Pole has traveled.
But my question here has to do with relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a possibility, even maybe a probability of relationship between the fact that here this guy is documenting a major change in the magnetosphere,
mm-hmm.
and we have this object, blue coccina or whatever, in the sky orbiting around something that is itself in orbit around the sun, and your documentation of the fact that we're getting solar wind from two directions. Mm-hmm. Is there a relationship with all of that? I mean, does all of that sort of fit together that maybe this change in the magnetosphere is being caused by the thing the blue coccina orbits?
Yeah, I see a relationship there. I see all of this anomalous behavior, all these, you know, these strange patterns that we're seeing not only with our sun, with our planet, but we're seeing with other planets as well. There's a lot of things happening in the system. And it all speaks to the presence of an interloper, a perturber that's coming through the system. And also the other thing is that, you know, that the meteorite in Russia,
mm-hmm.
that thing, NASA's official story is that it caught them off guard because it came from behind the sun.
Okay.
Came out of the sun. And that's what we're seeing here. All of these objects that we're observing on these webcams are close to the sun, which makes it very difficult to observe them. You can only see them either just before sunset or just before sunrise.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll get back to all of this in just a moment. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Marshall Masters. And, Marshall, one of the things that I've talked about many, many times on this show is that events don't happen in a vacuum. Information is not in a vacuum. And in fact, if you're dealing with information that appears that it is in a vacuum, in other words, it's just isolated information, mm-hmm. And it appears that it's in a vacuum. That's one of the first signs of a cover-up. Mm-hmm. Information doesn't happen in a vacuum. And if it appears to be, someone has made it appear to be. But over the course of time, you're talking about historical data, and I'm not taking a look at the data like you do, in detail like you do, but just looking at the events happening, kind of a big canvas approach over a course of time, mm-hmm. We've got this object And then the next thing is you're able to say it is an object that it's not a reflection, it's an actual object. And then you're able to say it is an object that is in orbit, but not around our sun. It's in orbit around something else that apparently is in orbit around our sun. And then you're able to say it's got four companions. You're able to say, well, you know, we've been tracking the fact that, you know, the magnetosphere is getting hit with solar wind from two different directions now. And, of course, you know, the sun is not in two places, folks. Mm-hmm. And so if it's getting hit from two directions, there is a second source for this energetic wind, this solar wind. And then now comes this video where he's showing the charts. In fact, folks, the picture that's on my website is from one of those charts, I think. Mm-hmm. It looks just like that.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think the guy did a really good report with his video.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has some assumptions that I can't comment to him. I can't say yes, I can't say no. But, you know, what I have seen, particularly in the last year,
uh-huh.
is there's a fresh crop, you know, there's fresh blood coming into the topic. New people are coming in with fresh eyes, and they are seeing things that just delight me, that they're picking up on these details and they're bringing a lot of passion to this. It's not this cornball amateurish stuff. It's people who are seeing something and they are trying to make a really intelligent effort to convey and share that information with others.
Uh-huh.
And I am just really, really delighted to see it. I mean, the cover-ups, Kevin, you know, been seeing that forever, but it's this new generation of folks coming on YouTube with really, really good material, really fresh ideas. It's excellent, and I'm sure it's got the disinformationalists in a scramble mode sometimes.
What do you think's causing the fresh crop?
Well, first off, this is a topic that is not going to die. All right, it'll have its times when it lulls, and then times it just comes charging back. But it is something that people keep coming to this topic because they're seeing what's happening in the world. They are seeing all of these changes with volcanism and seismicity and weather weirding. And, you know, it's just the old rationalizations and the old explanations just don't cut it. And so they're seeing something. You know, it starts off with, and the point of contact where the rubber meets the road is that first question, which is, what am I seeing here? And that first question is huge. I would say that maybe 2 or 3 out of 100 is going to ask that question. Everybody else is going to look at it. And if they feel the tickle to ask that question, they know where it's going to lead, and they don't want to go there. And so they go, no, this is not my cup of tea. And they, you know, boom, they bounce out. And so it's a very rare group of people that'll look at this and say, I need to understand this. And then when they do that, they'll want to share it with people. And the fact that there's so many of these new YouTubers that are coming on and really doing genuine work just impresses me. It tells me that there is a much broader phenomena going on here, a much bigger awakening than people really expect.
All right, and so now let me...
that's a good thing.
Let me ask you to throw modesty aside as we talk about the change, the sea change, if you will, in people being interested in this and a whole new crop of people coming on and looking at it. Have you had anything to do with opening those eyes and creating that interest?
Maybe indirectly people would see my work and do something, but most of the time the things I'm seeing are people coming in with fresh, you know, they're seeing something and it's not like they're looking for fresh angles, not that they want to talk about something somebody has not talked about before. They're coming in with simple pursuit of truth stories. And like this, like the guy that you linked,
mm-hmm.
all right? And sure, you know, they can, you're going to get some sort of credentialed expert to say bad science, bad astronomy, amateurs, and all kinds of other patronizing and dismissive nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, it's like, hey, these guys can be just as wrong as anyone else. They're trying to pay for their kids' orthodontia and their child support.
Now you're talking about the PhDs.
Yeah, uh-huh. You know, so I mean, they got to go where the bread's buttered. You know, the golden rule, who has the gold makes the rules. And when you have these sites that are going up and they're showing this information and then people are following it and they're doing YouTube videos, you can just see this. It reminds me of the old parades when I lived in Phoenix, Arizona. They have all these horses and they'd be going, and you knew the parade was over when the guys were coming behind with the big wheelbarrows and the shovels, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine what goes in there. And when I look at this manipulation, it's literally about as elegant as the pooper scoopers following the horses.
Mm-hmm.
And they're patching and band-aiding and doing all kinds of quick and cheesy fixes. It's gotten past the days when they just didn't have to worry about it. So you see these manipulations going on. I see them all the time. And if this weren't happening, the topic wouldn't be in somewhat of a lull right now. It would be hotter.
Uh-huh.
So when you have the guys that are putting up these videos like this, they're not buying into this artificial lull. They're digging. God love them.
So it sounds like I'm hearing you say that even if they make some assumptions that you think are big leaps that maybe are not totally supported by their what they found, it's still good work.
You bet. Absolutely. I just love these guys. When I see them and I see them coming out there and doing this stuff, that is fabulous. That is service to others, and I just love them for it. So, you know, this is going to go on. Right now, I see we're in a stage where there's all kinds of this manipulation, and it's Band-Aid manipulation. There's going to come a point where events get so significant it's just not going to be worth their while to try and sweep it under. It's just going to be to a point where it's so much in everyone's face that it's just going to roll forward from there. But the manipulation,
in other words, there's going to be too much poop to scoop.
Yeah. You know, well, I'm hoping there's not too much. I mean, all they have to do, keep in mind, it goes back to the simple formula of Titanic rules. You know, elites get the boats and steerage goes down with the ship. We're steerage. And so the first to fall are going to be the last to know. And as long as we are the last to know, as long as there's public consensus that there's, you know, all is well, nothing to worry about, and then it hits, at that point, the public is going to be so unprepared. Even if they hate the government's guts, they're going to have to roll with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think this is really, over the years, you know, yeah, there was this, well, the government is just trying to prevent a panic and from collapsing the country and so forth. I just don't buy that anymore. I just see more of this is just intervention on behalf of elites, and we're going to know that the guacamole is hitting the fan when the tarmac at Denver International looks like a bad case of the measles with corporate jets.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, I have a few more questions of Mr. Marshall Masters. We'll be right back.
ones that left us much too soon. In the summer, with a cheer and a smile.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Marshall Masters. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you are here, and you have my most sincere sympathy for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. My sincere, best, most ardent wishes, prayers, dreams, and meditations that that tragedy never befalls you again. We are talking about the object in the sky that Marshall and his group have been monitoring and collecting data regarding. But coupled with that, we have thrown in information from a YouTube video that has just come out that shows a polarity change in the magnetosphere. And what we're talking about is, what are the possibilities that all of this is actually related? And now we just begun to talk about the fact that events are going to become so obvious that they will be undeniable. And being undeniable, it means that everybody will see them. And there's no longer any way to say, no, it didn't happen, because it'll be happening all around us, right at your toenails. And with that being the case, Marshall, you have stated on the show before, and you've stated in writing, what you're talking about is real mega catastrophes, or in some cases, if they're not mega catastrophes, it's a swarm of catastrophes giving you a mega result. And so people will be cast into pretty much a survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
In conversations that I've had with you since our last show, in fact, right after that last show, and we were on the line still talking after the show, is the first time it came up. You talked about, and folks, I want you to listen carefully to this. You talked about an ancient breathing technique that you think could be very key to people surviving.
Absolutely. It's called Dundrum breathing, and I came across it actually with interviewing a fellow by the name of Roar Shepherd back in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And for those that follow my work, particularly during the time when we were doing Comet Elenin, that was a very stressful period, because a lot of the Comet Elenin story was an artificial hype. It was designed to deflate the entire topic, and by just unnecessarily scaring the hell out of people. And so when I put up my video to talk about Elenin, I was really saying, okay, this worst case is, you know, it's not in the majority side of what could happen here. More likely, it's just going to be remembered as a bad event, and that's how it's remembered. People still talk about it. But I developed irritable bowel syndrome at the time, and it's really limiting. And you know, mainstream medicine just doesn't have an answer for it, aside from here's something to mask it and a shrug of the shoulders. And so at that time, I was, and concurrent with that, I was finding that I was not as steady on my feet, losing my sense of balance, it seemed like. And both of those things really concerned me. And Roar Shepherd, Master Roar Shepherd, invited me to Berkeley for a class he was teaching. And one-day class on Dundrum breathing. And this is an ancient art. And this is it's a survival breathing system. This thing goes back thousands and thousands of years, back to a time when there was nothing like what we have now, not even close to it. And the Korean elites practiced it. They basically pulled in a lot of information from other disciplines, heavy on the acupuncture side, but it's non-invasive. And they used it to maintain clarity, health, and stamina so that they could make good decisions, work longer, and be less susceptible to disease. And this is just something it's gone for years. And so I was interested, but again, I couldn't travel. But what I did do is I started using Chinese herbs and medicines and acupuncture to treat it. And that did get me some relief. And I figured, okay, if Eastern solution here is working without, you know, going the masking route, then let me just see what this will do. And I spent a whole day in the class. There's part of the thing is doing an assessment. And I was in such bad shape when I was doing the assessment, instructor Paula Damaskinos, if she hadn't been literally standing right behind me, I'd have fallen on my keister in the first 10 seconds. And today, you do that assessment as you go along to measure yourself. And I just keep going until the calves go, you know, you made your point, chill out.
But okay, so before we get too far, I want to ask something about the Chinese herbs in conjunction with this. I mean, if you're going to do this breathing technique, do you need to get rid of Chinese herbs, or can you keep doing them, or do they complement each other, or do they conflict?
It complements everything else in your life. It's common sense. You know, it's a matter of using exercise and diet. You know, it's a health freedom. So you don't get rid of other things. I mean, if you break your hip, you fracture your hip, you're not going to go to a massage therapist. You need a good surgeon. And that's where you go. But on the other hand, what I found with Danzun breathing for me, that, and this was the point that really impressed me, was my sense of balance improved dramatically. Huge, huge, huge thing. And it was reducing my stress. And it also, in terms of my bowel disorder, it quieted it down. Now, it's not the sense of balance returned, and I kept it. The bowel, I have to just continue doing it. It's 20 minutes a day. It's a very gentle thing. If you break a sweat, you're not doing it the right way. But it controls it, and all I have to do is my Danzun breathing and just not eat a bag of peanuts, and I'm good to go. And so, I don't have any more restrictions on it. And this was, as a catastrophism researcher, this was when it really clicked for me. Because when you're doing, and I have the same problem in my own preparation and planning over the years. You know, beans, bullets, and bunkers are pretty straightforward when you're a prepper. But when it comes to health issues, you know, yeah, there's colloidal silver and baking soda, and these things are good to have, and I've talked about them. But with the Danzun breathing, you don't need anything. Nothing. Once you have the knowledge, it's simple to learn. You just do your exercises, and it's going to be effective. And so what I could see is that in a survival situation, it oxygenates the body, which is the big advantage. There's two things that the practice does. One is it draws positive healing energy into the body. So it's like acupuncture. You're channeling energy, except you, instead of using needles like they do in acupuncture, it's a mental process of visualization and focus. And then that is combined with very gentle movements, and the movements are really helping to open those energy channels at the same time that you're just, you know, making your body more supple and limber. One of the things you'll notice is that old, you know, joint aches will go away. The people that, you know, that come to this thing, like myself, come because you're not trying to find your inner ya-ya. You've got a pain, and you're trying to deal with it, and you're not finding relief elsewhere, or you don't have access to it. You know, that's one of the problems with medicine in the country today. And I really feel like, you know, the doctors and the nurses on one side and the patients on the other, and we can't seem to merge in the middle with our health caregivers without having to pass through, you know, a hell's acre of leeches that have got to siphon money out of the system. And so you have insurance clerks that are deciding what kind of treatment you're going to get. And it just makes the whole thing risky. So for folks that are getting downsized in their policies, or you're in the private market, which I call blue double cross, you know, the thing of it is that if you have, you break a hip, you need to go and you need to get a doctor to take care of that, a good surgeon. But on the other hand, doesn't it make sense to do something that would improve your sense of balance and make your body more limber and more supple so that an accidental fall is not going to wind up in a fracture, or you're not going to have that accidental fall at all? And so there's no panaceas, there's no absolutes, but it is something that significantly improves your odds. And that is the whole history of this thing. And it helps people, whether you have back pain, you feel like you're out of balance, you can't make a good decision. It is very calming. It has a meditative effect at the same time it's energizing the body. And
but there is one thing
that was when I decided this is what preppers need. It's not to replace anything in the kit, it's to fill the open gaps.
But there is one thing that it apparently cannot do, and I would say you're living proof of that, and that is it does not regrow hair.
Oh, you got me. Oh, God.
I wish you could see me. It does not regrow hair. I have no hair up top, very, very little. You have to have a very strong magnifying glass to see the hair I've got on the top of my head. But no, I understand what you're saying. The reoxygenation of the body, that's good because cells need it in order to live, and we're made up of cells. And so that's good. How does it improve your balance? What's it doing there?
It's working. The thing about Donjon breathing is that you're really working on the whole body when you're doing an exercise routine. You're starting at the head, going all the way to the feet. And as you're doing this, and I mean, keep in mind, anywhere, anytime, you don't need instructors, classes, special outfits, none of this stuff. I mean, it's wherever you could just stand and have a free moment, whether you know, you're at the office and you go into the office supply room for a quiet moment and you come out relaxed. So that's the beauty of it. And when I looked at this thing, I was really thinking about, you know, as a survivalist, you have to think about survival in stages. It's just not a simple and or.
Okay.
If you're first going to be surviving in place. And you're going to be surviving in place with whatever you have on hand. And so if you're down in a basement, you're in a bunker or wherever, you're going to be in a confined situation. It's going to be extremely stressful. You may have something where you have limited rations and people are at each other's throats. You know, you just start getting there. With the Donjon breathing, it not only is it energizing, oxygenating the body, which really has a great benefit, it helps you fight disease more effectively, but it calms the mind, it gives you clarity.
Okay.
So if you're in a panic situation and you have people going nuts with it, this is really great. And when I look at this, my audience that follows my work is principally in the age group of 45 to 65. And so, you know, there's an old Russian joke. If you wake up in the morning and you're not feeling any aches and complaints, it's because you're under 40 or you're dead. And there's some truth to that. So you have those normal aches and complaints of age. And for folks that are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and I'm also talking about, you know, I've met a lot of, in the course of my research, grandparents in their 70s and their 80s, and they're preppers and they have been doing it for some time. And in some cases, they're not even doing it for their own families because their families think they're nuts. But yeah, they're doing it because they have a sense of mission that they feel that they need to prepare places for other folks, that they're just confident that the universe or God, Yahweh, whatever, will bring it to them. Well, when I looked at this, I was really thinking about these people. Because these senior citizens that are doing this are my personal heroes. Yeah, I love these people more than you can imagine. There's been times when I've just like, oh God, that's, I'm going to pack it up and throw the towel in. And then here they are, they're doing this. And it's like, wow, not only can it help them with concentration and flexibility and being able to cope with negative energy, because people coming out of a panic, losing their homes, losing loved ones, they're going to be stressed. But it's something where if you take the children, and here's an important thing, in a survival situation, it's going to be the 20s and 30 somethings that are going to have the best odds of surviving. It's, you know, difficult times are brutal for the very young and the very old. But here's something where my heroes, my senior citizens on mission, who are prepping to help others, if they have this, they're not only helping themselves and leading others, they, you know, the information is easy to share and we designed it that way, but they can work with the small kids. And so you can have the grandparents leading the small children in Danjun breathing exercises. The children are going to calm down. It's going to bolster their immune system, so the kids are going to be a little less susceptible to diseases, which is going to be a real issue. And that's going to leave the adults, the mainstream adults, free to focus on the more manual tasks of survival. So it was an all the way around good thing. And what we did was, you know, when I looked at it, I looked at it from two ways. First is that when I was a young man in the Army, I was a medic. And a 91 Bravo, equivalent at that time of a licensed practical nurse. And I knew everything that was in my aid bag, knew what I could do with it, what I couldn't, what it was good for. All right, you know your limitations. And the thing is, there's no panacea, but you could do the important things, and that's what really mattered. And so I took that same logic to this system, because Danjun breathing, like any other Eastern art, it could be something where you take years to master huge amounts of the stuff. But yet, if you look at any of these, and it doesn't matter what art you're talking, whether it's yoga or Danjun breathing, it always started with some basic, simple core poses that were really effective. And then over time, things just start piling on. It becomes bigger and more complex. And what I did with Master Roar Shepherd and instructor Paula Damaskinos was that I said, all right, what we really need to do is get back to these core poses that are thousands of years old and are being practiced today because it's effective. People concentrate better. They're more flexible. It helps them fight depression, make clear depression, or make clear decisions. They're having these positive effects. And we put them into this system. It has 57 core poses. And we break them down by low impact, universal, and high impact. Low impact is ideal for people really out of shape, like I was my first day. Universal poses are for everybody. And then high impact is for the folks that want more of a challenge. And, you know, I'm starting to work high impact poses into my own exercise plan. But the thing is that the universal poses have the most elemental poses that are important. And what's really, really vital, what I like about this as a survivalist, is that you can do these in a wheelchair or in a sick bed, and you can get a measure of relief. There are things that you can do just lying in bed that are going to calm your mind and help you fall off to sleep. There's things that you can do to
like take the focus, like energy. Take that cap off that bottle of New Amsterdam vodka.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
It works, you know. I mean, it's called tapping, is this one pose, and you do it laying in bed. And, you know, I'll wake up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and if something is just flying through my head, and I can't turn it off, and I just do this Danjun pose, and within minutes, you know, that's it. I fall off to sleep.
But this is not anything, I mean, this is nothing like yoga or any of the martial arts. I mean, when we talk about high impact, what are we talking about here?
With high impact, some aggressive stretching poses that would remind you of like Hatha yoga. And You know, there are some poses that, you know, there's a few of them that, yeah, you want to be double jointed. You know, but for the most part, you know, there's a general rule with Danjun breathing. And the number one rule is never push into pain. Never, never, never push into pain. Challenge is good, but you never push into pain. And if you break a sweat when you're doing it, you're not doing it. Because this is not about, you know, it's not a lot lifting weights or yoga where you're stretching major body muscle groups. And yoga is great. I did yoga and it's wonderful. But the thing of it is you got to go to yoga classes, you know, and you get the blocks and the mats and all of that. And then they show you everything and you go home and boy, do you forget a lot of everything. And that's the whole problem I see with a lot of the Eastern healing arts is that they're very, very powerful, but it's a slow immersion process. And that was what I wanted to change because I am a retired systems analyst in the computer industry. Oracle, Sun Microsystems, these were my clients, Silicon Valley and many others. If you remember on 9/11, that satellite that took the look down picture of Ground Zero, I worked on that project. I actually worked on the software that targeted that picture. So I'm very familiar with taking complex concepts and then boiling them down so a $15 an hour lab technician can operate the equipment. And what I did was I just, when I started doing this and I set out and I said, okay, I want this for the preppers. I just hate it when you get into something and next thing you know, they're moving the goalposts. Whoa, there's level one, then there's level two, then there's level three. And each time you got to keep throwing money. And a lot of times you don't get the benefits up front that they promised you. And so when we were designing this together, I just said, hey, this is it. When people get this, it's going to deal with the vast majority of normal aches and complaints that are going to give them relief, help them deal with survival issues of stress, hunger, fatigue, these things. And we make it so accessible that it's like the Army medic aid bag I used to carry when I was a young man. It's there. Boom, you can find it. And so it's six DVDs in the set. And this is going to cover the exercises. So if you're bringing someone in, you just give them a low exercise DVD. It's standardized. It gives them a place to start and for you to reference with it. And then from there, you're using what we call the trainer reference system, which has all 57 exercises, and they're demonstrated on three different discs, and it's in a full color handbook. And what I did with that book was I went crazy with metadata. All right, data that describes other data. Given what's in the news, we know metadata is pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. All right. And with this, you come to it and you say, what part of your body do you want to work on? Or what is your emotional complaint? Or what is your physical complaint? What part of your exercise program do you want to change? There's going to be a table of contents or an index that is going to just boom, zero in on that pose or series of poses that you need to do. And so you find, you know, like you have a problem with menstrual cramps. All right. My wife is premenopausal. And what she was telling me, because she's been doing Danjun breathing, and just this evening I was really surprised. She said, you know, I'm going into menopause and my cycle went down to 24 days.
Well, we're going to have to get the rest of that story on the other side of the break. We'll be back, folks.
Cashing in, digging down, 'cause it took too
right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my conversation with Marshall Masters. And we started out talking about the object that he and his group have been documenting and analyzing, and the fact that the camera, the object in the sky, and the camera that was observing it day after day disappeared. Well, the camera didn't disappear, but the feed did, went down. We talked about a video that is on YouTube that discusses the shift in polarity of our magnetosphere. We talked about the relationship between all of that, and it has now evolved into a discussion that I found very, very interesting when Marshall and I talked about it in private conversations. And that is a an ancient Korean technique that enhances health in a lot of different ways. And according to Marshall, if you even break a sweat doing this, you're doing it wrong. You're not doing it correctly. As we went away for break, Marshall, you were about to tell us something about your wife.
Yeah. She found that it improved her menstrual cycle. She's premenopause, and it's helping her with that time, and it's been a difficult one for her. So the Danjun breathing is what you're literally doing is that you're bringing energy through the top of your head. You're visualizing this down to an area of your body called the Danjun, which is in an area that the women know is the womb. It's going to be between the pelvis and the belly button. And this is, even in the West, we have a preoccupation with gut instinct. All right, we trust our guts. Mm-hmm. And the same thing was in the East, except they were asking them that question thousands of years earlier. You know, what's with the gut? And that's where they were finding that there's that energy resonance down there. It's like a reservoir. And that's what you're really doing, is when you're doing the energy, I can tell you what I feel when I'm doing the exercises, is I feel the energy, you become sensitive to it, you feel the energy passing through your body into your Danjun, and then forcing out the spent energy out through the bottom of your feet. And I know when I've been doing the exercise long enough, because the balls of my feet start to feel like peppermint patties. They get that cool kind of brisk feeling to it. And that's all you're really doing. You're just drawing energy, positive energy into the body, but it's also belly breathing, which is what we do naturally, as infants, when you're, you're changing a baby's diaper and they're laying there. You know, where do they going to have a chest falls like we do as an adult? No, they're breathing with their bellies, because that's, nature makes us do that because it's the most efficient way to oxygenate the body. It's just that as we get older and we get into other habits, we quit being belly breathers, we start being chest breathers. You know, and I got to tell you, even when I've asked the folks with the Danjun breathing to explain why do we transition that way, they just look at me and go, boy, that's the $64,000 question. But that's what you're doing. And if you look at your dog, you look at your cat, you look at animals, they belly breathe. This is just the most efficient way to draw air in. Ask anybody who's doing radio for a living, or if they're on the stage, you gotta speak from the gut. That's where that energy is gonna come, so that your voice can project, that it has power. So that's what you're doing, is that you're pulling this natural energy in through the top of your head to your Danjun in the area that's called the womb, and then pushing out spent energies. But at the same time, because you're doing this in a belly breathing mode, you are increasing your oxygen levels by about 7%. And so you really, when you finish the exercises, you really feel refreshed and peaceful, in a sense of calm. You're ready to go out and just take the day. To me, it's much better than a 5-hour energy drink.
Are there any, like with yoga, you have the stretching. Do you have any of that with this?
You don't. You have some movements that are reminiscent of yoga. I can say personally, looking at this, is that the Koreans are very practical people, and so they looked at a lot of different systems. They drew mostly from acupuncture, but you know, if it was somewhere else and they liked the idea, they adopted it. But here, you're not doing as yoga is doing, where you're stretching the muscles, and you know, and some of the poses can be, you can really push it, you can really get aggressive with them. Dungeon breathing is, you're moving the body to open the energy channels. It's like self-acupuncture. Instead of going to an acupuncturist who's going to treat you with needles, what you're really doing is you're doing self-acupuncture. You're opening up your own energy channels, and then you're bringing it in. So consequently, you can do it anytime. You can do it anywhere. You don't need anything special. And you don't have to do a full exercise. I mean, there's times when I will just do one or two poses beforehand. And I will tell you, you know, it's the most boring thing to watch. It's not like yoga where you, woo, you know, like you look at some of these yoga poses and, you know, you just think to yourself, you know, I'm getting muscle cramps just looking at it, you know. It's not that case. This is something where these are very gentle movements, and you're opening up the inner channels. In the process of doing that, you're helping everything, all right? Because you're getting the energy flowing in, you're getting blood flowing, you're getting more oxygen flowing, and this is great. Then also, you find certain parts of the body are going to be connected to other parts of the body. Such as the neck is connected with the liver issues. You know, waist poses are used with bladder issues. Knee poses are used with stomach, because this just happens to be where the energy channels are that you need to do. So it, for folks that are doing acupuncture, a lot of the things are similar. And what we do in the trainer reference manual, which is an all-color book with all of the poses, and with all the tables and indices, is that in the first section of the book, we talk to people as volunteer trainers, because we not only want you to just have it so that, you know, it's 1 pound, 5 ounces, put it in your backpack, you got the whole thing. The DVDs are designed to work on old solar powered laptops. We really are thinking of the prepper audience. And what you're doing is you're using that to take standardized poses at first so people can get into it, get positive results. Then you're customizing it. And in that first section of the book, we're sharing some core concepts. One's called the five elements, which is an ancient form of body typing. And then what we do is we not only explain the five elements so that you understand what are the five body types and what are the types of physical issues that are going to be related to them, but then we also give you a facial profiling system so that the first time you meet somebody, you just look at their face and you're going to know they're going to have more than likely certain types of issues and others not, so that when you're asking them questions as a volunteer trainer, it's just going to amaze them. They're going to think that you know things about them that, you know, they're not going to know. And yet, that's what this system is all about. It's this simplicity so that you can look at it, assess what they're doing, and then help them get started. We talk about listening skills, how to do things, so that people build confidence not only in you as a volunteer trainer. Because I really, in my mind, when I wrote this book, all right, Roar and Paula did they did 3/4 of the book, that part of it they were dealing with the poses, but I was the one really driving this first one, and I was really going back to my young days as a medic in the Army, and it was like, you know, how did the Army teach an 18-year-old kid how to save somebody's life? And I don't care what you think about the Army, but it was impressive training, and it was something that has stayed with me over the years.
Okay, so
what I did here. And so it's easy for them to jump into it and start being effective.
All right, so let's, I know you got into this. I know you, although I don't think we've ever met face-to-face. I know you pretty well because we've talked mm-hmm. a lot on air and off air.
Right.
And I've read a lot of things that you've written. So I know that your interest in this, although it began because of physical problems you were having, your interest in doing the project and making this available truly is based on your outlook on things and the need for survival and so mm-hmm. forth. So let's take a real scenario. By real, I mean... Let's describe a scenario that really could happen, and we know it can happen because we all watched it on TV when it did happen. And that was a great tsunami that took out 250,000 of our fellow beings.
Mm-hmm.
So you're on vacation and you're over there in any one of those areas that was affected by that tsunami. And you're having a wonderful vacation, and all of a sudden the tsunami sweeps ashore, and let's just say that there's a great earthquake with it, so we have buildings collapsing at the same time we've got this great tsunami coming ashore. When it's all said and done, the area you're in is totally devastated. Electricity's off, the gas supply is off, roads are blocked. It's Mad Max. How is this? How does, I think you pronounced it Dongjung?
Dongjung breathing, yes.
Dongjung breathing.
Dongjung.
How does this play any role in the survival of those people? How will it help them?
Good question. Now, if they are doing Dongjun before this happens and you're practicing it, first off, you're getting the immediate benefits of doing this, which means you're going to have more stamina and more energy. So literally when that quake hits and you're doing the intelligent thing, which is you're running uphill screaming, feet don't fail me now. Well, if you've been doing the Dongjung breathing, you're going to be steadier on your feet, you're going to move better, and you're going to have more energy to get yourself out of harm's way. And so that's one of the reasons why, just if you're doing it now, you get the immediate benefits now. But you also build up a reservoir of health benefits that are going to help you when the guacamole hits the fan. And, in the meantime, it's just nice not having to worry about, going to the doctor's office as often. That's the immediate benefit. And just, aches and pains disappear and you forget about them and you realize that. But in doing all of that, you're going to be calmer. You're going to be more focused. You're going to have... your body is going to be naturally stronger. So just getting yourself out and dealing with it. Now, after you have the event, now you're dealing with really extreme stresses. You're dealing with depression. You're dealing with fear, hunger, all kinds of maladies. But the big one is just people are shocked and they're in a malaise. And so... when you're doing this, this is at a point where you finally get to, a safe area.
Hate to break in. We have to take a break, but hold that thought because we will come back. We will be back, folks, right after this.
sharp, it'll make you bleed. We don't talk, we just punch the clock. We can't find each other in the same old gridlock. Maybe a little escape, what we need. Living your love and your work like a dog every morning. The city's a pain like the latte stain on your dress. Granted, a bump in the road, not really a part of the drive. Come on, come on, it's alright. You made me believe tonight. Love that makes it so damn good to be alive. Oh, so let's drive away. Let the sunlight chase us on. Coffee shops and the bar. Well, baby, maybe it's too late. Maybe, baby, it's just fate. Maybe you'll take my hand and we'll get in the car. Whoa, whoa, whoa. So let's drive away. Let the sunlight chase us all day.
You don't know why.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Marshall Masters. I have not opened the telephone lines tonight, and in a way I apologize for that, and in a way I don't, because I wanted you to get this information. I want you to get this. I want you to hear what I've been hearing, and then decide for yourself what you think. I mean, it's got me thinking a lot about simple things we can do that will make a big, big difference in our own personal survivability. Marshall's talking with us about that. Marshall, I cut you off in mid-sentence, and I can't remember what you were talking about now.
Well, we were just at the disaster is over, and what are you going to do next?
Yeah.
And, you know, like in Japan, these people wound up in schools and community centers. Even months after 3/11, they were still eating, you know, potatoes and bread and really not getting a good diet. So caloric intake is difficult. Also, in those kinds of situations, you're just surrounded by a lot of people. And so it's much easier for a flu or a bug to pass around, and that's going to cause problems for people. So what the Donjon breathing does, imagine there you are, you're in, you know, some sports dome or a school auditorium, and it's just packed with people and they're miserable. But there's always going to be a corner where you can just take your blanket, throw it down, and you start doing the exercises. What you're going to be doing is helping yourself with two things that are going to be a real key issue in those, which is you want to keep your immunity strong, but also you're going to be dealing with hunger issues. Even if there's some food, it's not necessarily going to be satisfying or filling. It could be cheap calorie food, stuff in packages. And so nutrition's a problem. With the Danjun breathing, because it's oxygenating the body, you increase your oxygen levels by as much as 7%. That is going to make you much more efficient physically in how you handle the calories. So it's going to deal with those hunger issues. It's going to deal with the malnutrition issues. At the same time, what it's doing is also bolstering the immunity in your natural system. There's one of the exercises that we show, we have at the website, feelbetteronyourown.com, or they can learn about this at my website, youwusa.com. And there's also a podcast there with Roar that really gets into the nuts and bolts of this. But when you're doing this, what I love about it is it's a bunker exercise. And that's it. Just as much space as you can stretch your arms is really all you need to do most of the poses. And so you find a corner of the gym, and then you just invite other people, friends, to come over. It's so simple. It's easy to teach them how to do it. And they're going to start feeling better. And they'll feel the differences. The first thing that they're going to feel, usually the physical complaints take about a week to 2 weeks before they really start to diminish significantly. But what you do feel initially is going to be the calmer mind and more energy. And that is the immediate effect that they're going to get. So this will be a way for you to get people's minds focused on something that's healthful, something that, because it's the movements, you're not breaking a sweat, you're not stretching and pushing yourself, so it's a very calorie efficient form of self healing.
And that's a key issue.
You also use it
being calorie efficient is a very key issue in that kind of a situation.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, every calorie's got to count. And that was the thing that, when I looked at this as a survivalist, all right, that was the first thing I zoomed in on, was that you had all of the benefits, but you don't have to do these extreme postures or calisthenics that are going to really chew up whatever your available calories are. If you're down to 800 or 900 calories a day, you know, this is not really a time to do jumping jacks.
Yeah, really. And here is another thing, and people may laugh at me about this, but I've been in, folks, when I was international police, I worked in these kind of places where things were devastated and services were not there, and you know, but people are. And you may laugh at this, but I'm going to tell you, if you don't have to sweat, you shouldn't.
Right.
Because your water, both the water output from your body, that needs to be controlled, but also your available water for just staying clean,
mm-hmm,
is going to be limited. Now, I know how to take a bath with a quart of water, but it ain't fun.
Mm-mm.
And I will tell you, in a case like that, being bald headed is a benefit, because the hair absorbs so much. Well, it does. You know, your hair absorbs so much water.
Yeah, it does.
When you wash your hair, but and that's why, if you look at pictures of me when I was in East Timor, most of them, I'm bald-headed. I shaved it and kept it shaved. And they used to call me American Eagle because I was bald, and they said I had a, you know, that eagle eye look in my eyes. And so the natives called me American Eagle. But the exercise like this, that where you're getting benefits, health benefits, and not breaking a sweat in these kind of situations is very critical.
It is. You know, and there's another thing to it, is that, you know, once things settle down into a routine, boredom sets in. and boredom is dangerous.
Yeah.
This gives you something, you know, because you can do it with other people. And it's very easy. Anybody can just, they can look at it and join in. And it's a great way to elevate their moods, to make them more hopeful, looking for a brighter outcome. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you know, it's the next best thing to, you know, an ongoing Parcheesi game. It's going to break that, you know, break all that tension. And the thing here that is really interesting when you look at the history of this is that Korea, when it comes to wars and famines and natural disasters, is a tortured country throughout time. It's why you have this horrific schism between North and South right now.
We've got about a minute left. Go ahead.
Okay. So the thing is that it got these Koreans through all of these bad times, and it'll do the same now. I mean, to me, it's like, what do you got left when all that, all the modern marvels of medicine are boiled down to sewing needles and dental floss? This is what you're going to have. You're going to have it to help you with back pain, menstrual cramps, a number of different things. It's not a panacea. It's going to help you, and it's something you do. So, you know, you're in a survival situation. Donjon breathing is going to help you. A good box of baking soda is going to help you. Colloidal silver could help you. These things are all great benefits. Okay, I am agnostic.
You need to give the web address real quick.
If it works.
Give that web address again where people can go find out about this.
FeelBetterOnYourOwn.com and also at YOWUSA.com. And there's free demos there. You can do some exercises. Kick the tires. See how much fun it is on your own.
Outstanding. I want you to stay on the line with me for just a moment as we bring this in for a close. Marshall, it's been fascinating. We've taken a look at the idea of survival from an angle I don't think a lot of people have talked about on radio. Maybe they have, but I don't think so. And I think it's new information. At least in the West, it's going to be, I think, new information for people. And I think it's worth us taking a look at and check it out. I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to sell anything to you folks, but check it out and see what you think about it. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.